Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show that shares insights into how you can build your business once, with hosts Jerry Lowry and Jennifer Navarrete.
Thank you for joining us today. My name is Jennifer Navarrete, and I am joined by Sherry Lowry, who is sharing her knowledge on what it takes to build your business once. Now, over the course of the last week, we've been talking about setting the mindset foundation. And on today's show, we're going to recap a week's worth of knowledge into one show. And I'm hoping that everyone's going to wish us luck on this. Right, Sherry?
That's right.
So on the first day, we really needed to lay that foundational piece, where you, and you did this by introducing the Know Yourself First theme.
Yes, and true confession, I actually am coming in the back door of this because I didn't really know that in the very beginning. I learned it over time, but after I'd built six different businesses in six different industries, and been told that there was no such thing as official business ADD, and that I wasn't on the verge of ill for having developed six businesses, and all six, though they worked and were successful, had at some point lost my full attention because I was always ready to do the next thing. And so what we're going to talk about for the recap, and what we've been talking about all this past week, is how do you more consciously than I did it design and build a business platform once that you can stay interested in, as well as interested in your industry and in your client base. And you have to know some things about yourself in order to be able to do that. And Jennifer, I'm sure you've been learning all along the way this past week, but also your whole career span, as to what you want to do more and more of and over and can do well, and still it's vibrant and vivid for you, versus what you do not ever want to have to do repeatedly again. So let me get your input.
You're so right. Yeah, you're so right about that, because a lot of times for me, if I'm not learning, I get bored. And yeah. I'm not, you know, it just becomes not interesting, and I'm not as excited or enthused about it. And so for me, the projects that are fast-paced and fast-moving do hold my interest, and I like working on those types of projects, whether they're self-directed projects or whether they're client projects. But there was a time where I did not know that. I did not know that that's what fed my soul and fed my energy and really caught, you know, helped me to grow. I was doing work projects that were tasking things that I could very well do, but gave me no pleasure, and I was at a frustrated stage in my life, work life, and I didn't know why that was, but now I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit of wisdom goes a long way.
Well, and you've just given me a great lead-in for what it is we can do and really can do pretty well, and we might have demand for, and it may even pay well, or at least pay sufficiently. But we don't begin to know to ask the question early on the way we can learn to do, is this mine to do, really and truly? Because a lot of what you're capable of, especially now at this career stage, but you've had these stages, all these different types of stages all along the line, had you known from the very get-go what was really and truly yours to do, because you could do it distinctively and well, and also be recharged or kind of retrofitted each time you did it with a new challenge and new learning and new experience. So that was the hardest part for me, because when you're in your own business, you like to have business. And even if it's not quite the right business, you'll take it anyway. You know, there's a point in time where you do that. And at some point, you have to learn about what part of that type of business you're going to keep and what you're going to help move on beyond you, or when you're going to expand, or when you're going to contract with more help or staff or that kind of thing. So part of our recap now is how to actually do from the beginning a business design that will act for you in your favor, both as a springboard and as your fallback safety net of comfort to allow you the flexibility and the freedom to do as much and more of what you love and also what's necessary, but at the same time keeping conscious of what your real plan is for delegation, hiring, or contracting of that. So do you have any critical beliefs? I'm going to talk also about critical beliefs a little bit today because I think that's been part of the backbone of how I've built my business. Did you have any critical beliefs at the very beginning that you knew were things that you were going to continue to keep believing?
You know, I have to say I'm not sure that I did because I think I was overwhelmed by what everyone else was doing. And if we go back to my 20s where I thought I needed to keep up with the Joneses, I think when I hit my 30s, I began to hit a stride of really knowing myself. And then when I hit my 40s, you know, it was like fantastic. But for me, I think in the last 5, 6, 7 years, what I've discovered, my mantra is just be, do, you. Whatever that is, however that is, if you stick to that, you're never going to steer yourself wrong because you're going to stay true to the core of who you were built to be and who also who you've grown to be. And that will keep you centered. And so that's probably my mantra that I say to myself. And I also share with others, you know, people who are conflicted about what should they do. And I'm like, well, who be yourself, do the things that stay true to yourself. And, you know, and it's you. That's you. So for me, that's what it is now.
Okay, that's good. Well, what I discovered early on and has stayed critical to my whole career all the way through, it's kind of like a really nice golden thread running through, and it was a little bit counterculture in the beginning. I don't know if you remember the continuous improvement method and era, but I came into this business and helped build this industry at a time when continuous improvement, a little bit at a time, was really kind of, you know, the way. And what I had learned is I did not want to work with improve. I had never needed a mediocre weakness. If it was a weakness, it was a weakness, and I could find somebody almost always to delegate that to collaborate with, who loved doing that, whatever it was, and had real depth in it, where I had kind of like, you know, just a little tiny bit. And so one of my first critical beliefs that became the part of the backbone of this business to this day, 23 years later, is I absolutely never have had a client who needed a stronger weakness. All of my clients have had some kind of defined capabilities and skill sets and also loves for doing what they were good at. And that's what we focused on. And how could we build on the platform of already working? And so that's informed a lot of what I have done, you know, in terms of drawing who it is as founders and owners. I primarily contract with the more high potentials in the marketplace. And so I early on in business coaching in my field and in my particular business to turn down or put a team together to handle the improvement issues. And corporations, that's what companies and corporations like to refer to us at the beginning, was what people who were not doing something well according to the corporate requirements. And that was for me to place. I had the capability to match them with a coach, and so I became the go-to person for who should this other person be sent to work with, rather than will you personally do this work? And the answer really quickly for me became no. That opened up a whole world of opportunity of what people really did want to do next, not to improve on next. So,
you know, that really ties into the listening for the big five, right? Because you have to be able to listen to everything in order to understand where you fit. So that was really great.
Yeah. And so what Jennifer's referencing in listening to the big five, we had one of our sessions talking about the five different things, both to tap into yourself for and that would inform you as the business founder or the business owner or the principal a principal, and what is that big five that you would want to listen to? One of those was focus, and we went into some detail on that, and you can listen to the back session on that. A next one was mindset and attitude, and we're talking about mindset right now, your frame of mind as a founder owner. And then what skills and capabilities do you need for that, or how can you bring those in to partner up with you? And then what are your habits and your practices, and what kind of patterns develop out of that? And we both, Jennifer, have tracked patterns, you know, for a long time. And then the most important one to me that's the easiest, usually and almost without fail present, is what is a sense of energy there? What kind of energy does that hold for me around that, or for the client, or even what kind of energy is the industry itself opening up, or is there opportunity here? And to go back over those from time to time, and almost always you'll find one quite present, and you may very well find one quite missing. And sometimes two will team up, which kind of defines for you more about what is yours to do more of, what may be yours to do less of, but to find somebody good that can cover that territory. And that brings us into, you know, the whole concept of partnership, too. Jennifer, I know you've partnered up very well in your space, and I have become more of a go-to person for who to partner up with sometime, because I like connecting people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it does kind of help to kind of know those things. And really the key, this whole week has really been very kind of for me to understand myself better, but knowing my strengths and knowing what mm-hmm. I like to do and good at, and then things I can do, as I more and more I reflect on this past week, I've really been able to identify those pieces where maybe instinctively I was doing that, but not really knowing that there was actually a method
right.
to that and there was reasoning for that. And I have been able to find partners who have been able to work really well with me. Analytics and those kinds of things, I can do them. I know mm-hmm. how to do them. I don't get a big joy out of doing them, but I have
right.
found someone in one of the projects that I work with that they love that kind of stuff, and they're really good at it. And so we
yeah.
work really well together because I like you know, face to face, and
right.
while she can do that, and that's not her strength though. So we've been able to
yeah.
really mesh our strengths together to work on projects in a really great way, and I think the client gets the benefit of having two people with very diverse strengths, but yet focused on their project in a way that helps them move their mission forward.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Well, you've led us directly into my second critical belief that still is laced all the way through my business practices and how I've developed my business, and also how I keep it fresh, both for me, for the client, but also how do I stay up with the industry. I had to learn early on how to define and to do it really specifically, what's enough for me. And I like the client to do that too, to identify what is going to be enough for them versus more than enough. Because just because we like something doesn't mean we have to dive into the very center of it and get it all over us, you know. And the kinds of things I'm talking about is we each need to know what is enough time, space, energy, availability, money, relationship, community, rest and recreation, stimulation and challenge versus what is overkill just because there are possibilities in those areas. Because I'm not a huge fan about preaching about balance, but I am a big fan about balance in action. Like when you're going to be, you might be active all day long, but you're active in enough different ways that everything is getting touched on. A lot of people get client work and they dive right into that, and then they do not do anything at all about their potential new client work or their pipeline. And they come to an end of a project and they're kind of stranded because they have not prepared the way along the way for other clients to join in and come to them who are potential in the beginning, but then could be, you know, some of the best client work they've ever done. So that's a space, that's a mindset, that's a positive space of possibility and what if versus the more linear what next. That was my Achilles heel. I, like you, kind of enjoyed the shiny and the new, and especially being on top of and at the forefront of new trends. I'm also an early adopter of hardware and gadgets and software. So I had a real natural, logical interest in what next, what next, what next. This business, because it was my seventh and I wanted it to endure, I wanted to go for more depth. Breadth was fine. The scope of it growing was fine. But what I was really interested in was building roots, building a strong platform that I could come back to and rest doing what I loved, or I could also challenge forth and break new ground by expanding a piece of this business at a time, which is what I've done every single year, is develop a new piece of it, which meant I had to let something go along the way. So did you have a knowing at some point that you had to become aware that you would fall into, or a knowing of one of the things that was going to be good for you no matter what to repeat over and over?
Yeah, you know, we talked earlier about when we talked about bandwidth, the topic of bandwidth. I shared the story of how at one point, you know, after the community here in San Antonio was built, my family kind of pulled me aside and said,
"That's right.
It's built. Like, there's other people here that can do it. You don't have to be at everything." And I was able to kind of pause and step back. And so what I did to kind of stop myself from overcommitting is that I identified five things that I was absolutely going to do, you know, whether it was the social media system, social media club, or whether it was my business and whether it was, you know, community. So my balance was between community events and my business. And so every time a new opportunity came to me, I had to identify, I had to pause and identify and say, does this new opportunity fit into these five things? If it does, then you can say yes. But if it doesn't, you have to gracefully say no. But what if you want to do it anyway? Well, then the rule that I had for myself in this bandwidth piece is that I had to decide which one of the five things I was going to say goodbye to. And I adhered to that for many, many years, and it was very, very helpful to me to stop myself from being overcommitted and overwhelmed and to still allow myself to have time for myself and my family and stay on track with the things that I had already identified were the core pieces, community side and business side, that I was interested in. But Sherry, I have to ask you, what are some of the advices that you have for folks who are getting so much of what they love that they're overwhelmed by the wonderfulness of having this great opportunity of doing what they love, but it's just, it's fire hose, right? It's too much.
Yeah, the more than enough kind of thing, yeah. Well, the first thing I would say to address that is it's important to discover how it is you want to be flexible in your scheduling. When do you want to have time for yourself to plan and to dream and to take stock and to reflect? Because that's kind of where the chocolate is for the future for most busy people, is that white space when they get to kind of make it up and just spend time in it. Because that's really where their creative edges sharpen. And so one of the things I would say that you do have to make a decision about is that though it feels and tastes like chocolate at the time, chocolate is not a full enough meal. And so they, for their own self-preservation and for the well-being of their business, they need to be really clear about what not just their bandwidth is, but what their accessibility for others is going to be. In my case, because I, like you, I show up really extroverted, and when I'm in a group, most of the time, I'm interacting, I like initiating, I like responding, but at the same time, I have like a 49% introversion side. It's just not very visible when I'm out, but I know that that's there, and it's waiting for me. And I had learned early on, and I had to learn, and it wasn't natural. It was kind of like a forced learning, that for every, say, 60% of the time I'm out, I need to be making sure that I have reserved 60%, 40% for the 100%, 60 out, 40 in. And so, for example, if I have a really long extroverted kind of an outside day, I know that I'm going to be on the way home probably about 5 or 6. I'm not going to add something in that night too. I also had to develop, and we didn't talk about this yet, but this is a good time to bring it forward just to get it on the agenda for one of our future sessions. I had to learn also about how many of the same type of business phase clients I wanted. Like the stage of your business is well developed, but if you were at startup, I would have to put a bit of a limiting bandwidth on how many startups at a time I was working with, because I learned early on, and I teach this now when I'm training other people, we have to have variety in our client base. Ideally, across a few varying industries, but also at the developmental stage of the business that the person is bringing in with them. So I need a mix of very seasoned businesses with very established business owners. I also love startup. I love working with high potential. But the main thing for me, and I have found it is for most people, is keeping enough variety to keep our edges growing and sharp and not get into too much repetition, client to client to client, of temperament or style or level of business development. So I don't know if that, do you think that begins to answer or to address the question?
It really does, because that will, even if it is the same thing, because they're in different phases, it doesn't feel necessarily like the same thing, and it feeds different pieces of energy inside of you, and it pushes you in a fun way, which keeps you growing. So yeah, that does. I think that's great, great advice. So that kind of leads us over to the know yourself first. What is your high road? Because you have to know what your high road is if you're going to, if this is going to be sustained and you're going to have longevity in this.
That's right. Well, let's define high road, because it's a little bit different for every single person. For me, it turned out to be, and I came upon this driving in California. You know, there are some areas around Monterey in California that are very beautiful, up on very high roads where you're looking down and you have the whole architecture laid out in front of you. I was driving on one of those during a solo trip I was taking. My kids lived in L.A. at the time, and I lived in Houston. And I made a driving trip because I wanted to have my car out there on a 3-week part business, part pleasure, part family reunion kind of trip. And I was on this beautiful high road looking down on the Monterey Peninsula, and I saw something growing in this gorgeous field, and it was beautiful. And part of it was green and vibrant and verdant, and the other part of it was in flower. And I was too high up to see well enough to recognize what the flowers were, and I did not know what that plant was. But it was clearly forming, some kind of forming culture. So I made my way down. I pulled over on the side of the road, down beside that that farmland, got out of the car, climbed a fence to identify what that plant was. And it was the first time I ever saw artichokes growing. And artichokes have different stages of their plant life when they look totally different than what we see in the grocery store. And I never knew that until I saw what the actual artichoke flower is like. And it's drop-dead gorgeous. And you can see it in Central Market or Whole Foods or someplace like that sold as a whole flower. And it's always the centerpiece. And it lasts, you know, a very long time. But underneath the whole thing is an artichoke. And the flower is when they let the vegetable go to seed, so to speak, and go to flower, and then it's not edible. It's just beautiful. So part of what I kind of gained from that knowledge was there's a time kind of and a season, you know, for every part of your business. And and the high road to me is where you're up high enough to be part of the umbrella, the overarching whole. You can see above and you can see below, but you know what is below you, not like I did not know. And you have a path. I have developed kind of a concept of a velvet tether, like a velvet ribbon, that attaches, brings me back to the high road, because I can get lost in the artichokes pretty easily. And my whole journey is on the high road. So what the velvet tether is about for me is giving me, because I am have an entrepreneurial nature and I have a lot of curiosity, and like you, I like shiny things. I have just enough velvet ribbon of a tether to let me off the high road to go explore and discover those artichokes, but at the same time, I haven't lost my path back to the high road. And when I diverge too far or too long, that velvet ribbon will tug me back to the high road. And I have to remember that's really my vision, my gift truly is vision and seeing the potential in other people and what is ahead in part potentially for them sometime before they see it, and other times in alignment with them. So the high road to me, for you to know, is where do you want to spend most of your time, where do you spend some of your best time, where it does give you a perception or an experience of what's ahead, what has just been behind, that you can then explore from and adventure out from.
Well, we actually did a recap in the time allowed. I'm so excited. So, Sherry, that was week one. Now, folks, we have three more weeks of this amazing Know Yourself First. I mean, we're talking about this Build Your Business Once. And so tomorrow, we start the new week and a new topic. Sherry, you want to give our listeners a tease?
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Tomorrow, I'd like to begin to talk about strategy. For us, we're going to eventually get into price setting, rate setting, raising rates, changing rates, all of that. But what I want to take away from the mindset and the know yourself is, given all that, once you've got some of that figured out, how do you set a good strategy for you? And strategy's bottom line is, if you don't have a competitive advantage, don't compete. So I'd like to talk a little bit in overview tomorrow about what is a poor to bad strategy. How does that show up? How do you recognize it when you're kind of like off course and it feels like a stretch? It feels like a goal. It sounds like a blue sky, but it's really just motivational rhetoric. And I want to build a template with you tomorrow about you crafting your next solid strategy. And so you can begin to put some underpinnings and some plumbing, so to speak, and wiring underneath your business. And I believe that is going to be enough for tomorrow. And then
Absolutely.
We can also address... Yeah, we can address any other kind of questions, because I want you to be able to be a good strategist, because you're going to have to do that to build a platform that both will protect you and kind of springboard you.
Can't wait. All right. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. And, of course, we are here as well tomorrow at 9:30. So we look forward to having you join us then.
Okay. Thank you.
Set a reminder for 9:30 a.m. Central every day in the month of November to listen to daily episodes of the Build Your Business Once show.